I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. There were some fascinating movies this year about real people. Eccentric millionaire and murderer John DuPont, codebreaker Alan Turing, scientist Stephen Hawking, artist J. M. W. Turner, civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr. Richard Linklater's Boyhood, that took 12 years to make, was on many people's top 10 list for its deeply touching portrayal of a family. Alejandro Iñárritu's Birdman, which looked like one continuous take, featured Michael Keaton in a standout performance. Bradley Cooper was the voice of Rocket in Guardians of the Galaxy, the biggest moneymaker this year, and the lead in Clint Eastwood's Sniper. Tilda Swinton gave two jaw-dropping and hilarious performances in The Grand Budapest Hotel and Snowpiercer. Today on Radio Times, the best movies of 2014. This is an annual tradition on Radio Times. In fact, our 12th year with our two guests who have joined us here in our Philadelphia studio. Neil Oxman is a political campaign media consultant, co-founder of the Campaign Group here in Philadelphia. He's also a caddy for Tom Watson. He saw 181 movies this year. Neil Oxman, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Happy New Year, Marty.
Happy New Year to you. And to you, Gary Thompson, Daily News film critic, blog called Keep It Real. Nice to have you with us on Radio Times, and Happy New Year as well.
All right. Happy New Year to you.
And to our listeners, lines open. We want to know about the movies that you enjoyed this year. That phone number, 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Gary, let me start with you. Overall, good year, bad year, so-so year, strange year?
I think it followed a pretty familiar trajectory, which is around September. I was really sweating things, wondering if I would have 10 movies for my top 10 list, and you get an explosion of interesting things, and now I think I'm good to go. But yeah.
It was a good year? I mean, all said and done?
I think so. Yeah, about average.
About average, but good enough.
For me, absolutely.
Yeah. How about for you, Neil?
Well, when I went through my list, and there are some movies that we haven't seen in Philadelphia because I see them in theaters and they haven't opened. But when I went through my list, there were 25 or 30 movies that I gave sort of a solid B to that you know, interchangeably could have been on two or three top 10 lists. I thought it was a nice year for movies. Hmm. I mean, it's not 1939.
No,
but,
it is not.
But I thought it was a really pretty solid year. Although, interestingly, film ticket sales are down again.
Yeah, and maybe we can talk about what we were talking about a little bit before off air, which is this kind of new platform for movies. I have two movies on my list this year which started out as crowdfunded Kickstarter movies. Some of these movies get traditional distribution. Some of them don't. They go to VOD. They go to Netflix. You don't always hear about them. You don't always get to see all of them, and that's a little bit frustrating for me. But it's a very good thing for aspiring talent.
Sure.
I have three movies on my list this year, which are first-time directors, almost four. And that's an interesting development. But it may be why ticket sales are down a little bit, because people are finding these movies that they like, on other venues.
Give us your top 10 list, Gary. And then we'll go to you, Neil.
In alphabetical order, The Babadook, Birdman, Blue Ruin, Boyhood, Fury, Inherent Vice, Kids for Cash, The Lego Movie, Nightcrawler, and Selma.
Ah, interesting. What's on your list, Neil?
Guardians of the Galaxy, which I think of those space movies has more heart and humor than anything since the first three Star Trek films. Locke, starring Tom Hardy, which is a British actor that Gary championed a few years ago. Boyhood and Birdman, because there were two of the most original movies that you're going to see. Calvary, which is a little Irish movie starring Brendan Gleeson and Chris O'Dowd. You can't go wrong with Brendan Gleeson and Chris O'Dowd. Brendan Gleeson has never been bad in a movie in his life. St. Vincent, the movie starring Bill Murray, where I think he's terrific. A Most Wanted Man, which is the last movie that Philip Seymour Hoffman played from the Le Carre book, and it's great. It's riveting. Grand Budapest Hotel, the Chris Rock movie called Top Five, which takes place in one day, is a wonderful romantic comedy between Chris Rock and Rosario Dawson, and is a great send-up of celebrity. And I have a documentary on my top 10 list, which Gary has as well, but Life Itself, the documentary about Roger Ebert, which will be on CNN at 9 o'clock on Monday night.
Oh,
and
really?
If you love movies, which I assume people listening to the show do, as the three of us do, I think it was really, really great.
And one of the best memoirs I've ever read as well, writing about his.
And my top documentary is Finding Vivian Mayer, which is just a fascinating story.
Well, I've sort of combined both documentary and fiction films, but in no particular order. The Grand Budapest Hotel, I think we all agreed on that. Finding Vivian Maher. Snowpiercer, which I just loved, even though I know it's kind of a crazy, wacky movie. Boyhood, I think we agreed on that. Most Wanted Man, I agree with you on that, Neil. Gone Girl, I'm a David Fincher fan. Foxcatcher, Birdman as well. Nightcrawler, which I really enjoyed. I thought that, again, very dark and interesting story. And then a surprise for me was a little Indian film called The Lunchbox. And I went with no expectations.
Loved it.
And completely seduced and enthralled by the story. So
I just
want
to say that we did not all agree on the Grand Budapest Hotel.
Oh, we did
but
not.
We never all agree on Wes Anderson, but I'll let you guys extol his virtues again this year. So.
Well,
it's running on HBO now, and I watched it. I only saw it once in the theater, and I watched it very quietly in my living room, and I think the writing is terrific, and we both agree that Ralph Fiennes is just hysterical.
That we agree on, yeah. I think it takes a really talented actor to make, in my opinion, some of the, you know, preciousness of some of the presentation of his material come to life for me. Like the attention to detail that most people love about Anderson, I find sometimes a little bit suffocating, but that's a matter of taste.
To me, it was sort of a slapstick fairy tale, but it had this sort of sense of foreboding set in some strange sort of Eastern European Alpine community, not even a community. And one sensed the sort of growing threat of Eastern Europe at the time, very subtle, but I thought it was I thought it was fantastic. In fact, we have a clip from Budapest Hotel, written, directed by Wes Anderson. And in this scene, Ralph Fiennes, he plays a Monsieur Gustave. He's the concierge at the hotel, talking with Madame D, played by Tilda Swinton. And this is the night before she leaves the hotel, and let's just give it a listen.
I'm not leaving.
I beg your pardon?
I'm not leaving.
Why not?
I'm frightened.
Of what?
I fear this may be the last time we ever see each other.
Why on earth would that be the case?
Well, I can't put it into words, but I feel it.
Well, for goodness sake, there's no reason for you to leave us if you'd rather...
Come with me.
To King Lutz?
Please.
Give me your hand. You've nothing to fear. You're always anxious before you travel. I admit you appear to be suffering a more acute attack on this occasion, but truly and honestly, oh dear God, what have you done to your fingernails?
I beg your pardon.
This diabolical varnish, the colour is completely wrong.
Oh, really? Don't you like it?
It's not that I don't like it. I am physically repulsed.
He's hilarious.
Neil Gary, Arthur? You have to watch it again. I'm telling you.
No,
it's great. It's great.
Well, let me play another clip, and this is from a film I think we all enjoyed, and this was Boyhood. It's the coming-of-age story written, directed by Richard Linklater, shot over a 12-year period of time. And Gary, talk about sort of taking a risk, you know, 12 years ago, casting this film, and especially casting Ellar Coltrane as the young boy, six, and we watch him grow up to be an 18-year-old.
I think Linklater had a terrific insight here, which is that most movies about family are about big moments and catharsis and confrontation. And that's not really the real story of family. It's something that has to take place over a much longer timeline and involves such things as patience and endurance and commitment. Okay, that's his insight. So how do you dramatize that? Well, his innovation is, I'm going to do this. I'm going to film the same kid periodically over a 10-year period and I'm going to show you time on film in a way that you haven't seen before. And the way that that innovation blends with his insight into how families really work, I think, is profound and profoundly moving.
I mean, it almost felt like a documentary to me.
Right.
For you, Neil?
Because I thought it was amazing. And the only movie that I can think of that was filmed over a reasonably long period of time is that documentary Hoop Dreams, which probably was 5 or 6 years at least, because it started them in sort of ninth grade and followed them actually through college, maybe 10th grade through college. But it was a long thing. But this is – somewhere I read that he shot this and only he shot only 39 days in the 12 years.
Right, cumulatively.
Which is – when you think about that, what a stunning –
Well, you use the word risk. There's really no way for him to know whether or not this was going to pay off. However, I did have a chance to talk to him, and he said about 2 or 3 days into the shooting or 2 or 3 years into it, he knew it was going to work because he'd seen the footage and you knew how magical it was.
Oh, that's great. I do want to play a scene, and just to add, it stars Patricia Arquette, Lorelei Linklater, that would be the daughter of the director, Ethan Hawke, and Eller Coltrane, who plays this boy, Mason. We watch him grow up, and this is a scene where Mason is being lectured by his teacher, Mr. Turlington, played by Tom McTeague. Let's give it a listen.
What do you want to be, Mason? What do you want to do?
I want to take pictures. Make art.
Any dipshit can take pictures, Mason. Art. That's special. What can you bring to it that nobody else can?
That's what I'm trying to find out.
Try harder. Hey, maybe in 20 years you can call old Mr. Turlington and you can say, thank you, sir, for that terrific darkroom chat we had that day. Get back to class and do your work.
Just another little, I mean, it's a tiny little scene. As you say, Gary, there are these moments. That's what growing up is about, right?
Well, here's the thing about Linklater. He's always been very good at these kind of pieces of Americana, and he's very good. He loves, for lack of a better word, ordinary people. And this goes back to Slacker and Dazed and Confused, a movie I had top 10 a couple years ago called Bernie. And I think he's sort of stumbled onto something kind of important here, which is that this family that he depicts is a very typical American family now, of the weekend dad or the every other weekend dad. Yeah. The mom is working her rear end off in various jobs and going through various boyfriends to try to keep everything together. And I was just so moved by the way everybody tries to do the right thing in their own way over a long period of time, and they end up making it work.
Well, and I thought Ethan Hawke and Patricia Arquette were both really just excellent. Again, they felt like real parents.
I think they're really good actors, especially Patricia Arquette. But I was stunned by – I don't think Ethan Hawke, to me, looked like he aged that much in real life over 12 years. That was one. Two.
Oh, interesting.
The thing that I thought was really daring about it is he picks a – I think he was 7 years old at the time. They shot the first 3 days, and he had his daughter there. His daughter – I've heard interviews that his daughter at some point wanted to get out of the movie.
Yeah, sure, and you can kind of see that
right,
in their
performance. It's your dad.
Which is cool.
Right. But I mean, you're picking a seven-year-old. How do you know whether the kid can act when he's 19, 12 years later? I mean, it's really brave to do what he did, and it wasn't –
Well, the other thing is you don't know if the kid's going to change his mind, and he's perfectly within his rights to do so. And I've heard people say, gee, I don't think the kid is a great actor. That didn't bother me in the least. His job is to kind of be a little bit awkward. It's an awkward phase of life. So that, to me, actually made it a better movie.
Well, let's take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. Doing something we do, in fact, we've been doing for the last 12 years on Radio Times, the end of the year, looking back at the year in movies. And our guests are Gary Thompson, Philadelphia Daily News film critic. His blog is Keep It Real, R-E-E-L. Neil Oxman is a political campaign media consultant, co-founder of the Campaign Group here in Philadelphia. He also loves movies. He saw 181 of them this year. I'm very jealous about that. And he also caddies for Tom Watson, if that weren't enough. We want to hear from you about the movies that you enjoyed. Give us a call, 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Tell us about the movies you liked. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane, and we're talking about one of my favorite topics, movies. And again, our guests are Gary Thompson and Neil Oxman. We do this at the end of the year. We pick their brains about the movies that they enjoyed over the year. And we, again, want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. I do want to talk a bit about Birdman. I think that was on all of our lists. And why was it on your list, Neil?
I thought the writing was great. I mean, I love theater. And I mean, the pretentiousness of Edward Norton.
And his willingness to spoof himself.
Exactly.
And people running around in underwear in this movie as well.
And Michael Keaton sort of sending up himself as Michael Keaton, having been Batman. And the whole thing. And, of course, this thing that everybody talks about, where the entire movie looked like it was shot in one take,
right.
And that the seamlessness between these takes of these long, I don't know how long the actual shots were. Some of them were 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 minutes.
Or longer.
Right. And the actors freaking out about the fact that they couldn't mess up.
Yeah.
I mean, that, you know, if you messed up a line at the end of a 10-minute take, it really, really screwed
things
up.
And I think
up.
You sense that as a viewer, and it just makes you enjoy the scene that much
right.
more because you know how much is at stake.
But they were all great.
Well, and to say, besides Edward Norton, you've got Zach Galifianakis, Andrea Riseborough, Amy Ryan, Emma Stone, Naomi Watson.
It was nice to see Zach Galifianakis actually in the same role in a movie, sort of being cast in it.
I want to throw another name out there. You had taken the time to mention the gentleman in Boyhood who has the very small role as an actor I've never seen before and really adds a lot to a movie in that capacity. There's a guy in this movie, I wrote his name down, Jeremy Shamus. I always want to create an award for supporting actors. Guys who are so good in their 45 seconds to a minute.
Which one was he?
He's the guy who plays the bad actor who needs to be got rid of at the beginning of the movie, and the Klieg light falls on his head. And you have to be really good to be that bad. And he was awesome. His name's Jeremy Shamus.
Well, and just to give a shout out to Michael Keaton, I mean, how wonderful to see him in such a meaty role and to see him be so good. Let me play a scene from Birdman. He plays a man named Regan, and here he is talking with his daughter Sam, played by Emma Stone. And again, this is about a man who's struggling to sort of deal with the fact that he once played this iconic superhero Birdman, and he's struggling to mount a play on Broadway. Let's give it a listen.
You think you'll be ready for opening tomorrow?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, well, I mean, previews are pretty much a train wreck. We can't seem to get through a performance without a raging fire or a raging heart on. I'm broke. I'm not sleeping, like, you know, at all. And this play kind of starting to feel like a miniature deformed version of myself that just keeps following me around and like hitting me in the balls with a tiny little hammer. I'm sorry, what was the question?
Never mind.
She says, never mind. I mean, you know, Neil.
It's Lindsay Duncan as the theater critic. The scene in the bar, I mean, she, who's great. I've seen her in London, in the theater in London, and I've had a gigantic crush on Andrea Riseborough, who was in this horrible movie called W that Madonna directed where she was Wallace Simpson. But I've had an amazing crush on her ever since. She's my new girlfriend who played
– Does she know this?
Who played his girlfriend in the movie. I mean, I thought it was just amazingly cast and really well done.
Yeah, and it's a movie about actors which thrives on the virtuosity of the actors who are at work here. It really was a pleasure to watch. And it kind of a pleasant surprise to me because Iñárritu is kind of known for making – grim and kind of insistently glum pictures. Mm-hmm. And this was so funny from top to bottom, beginning to end, that it was really a treat.
Let me get that. It looks like John from Lumberton to join us on Radio Times. And John, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You're
Happy
welcome.
New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you, too.
Thanks very much.
Sure.
I was hoping to get your take on John Favreau's movie, Chef. It was so entertaining. It had a lot of great names in it, and it was a lot of fun. It was the only movie I watched twice this year.
Oh, that's great. I thoroughly enjoyed that movie. What did you think, Gary?
Yeah, so did I. I like these movies about maybe this is my prejudice as a dad is getting a kid to college next year, but I like these movies about fathers and sons where the son apprentices and learn things about life, and I thought this was a really nice example of the genre.
And a beautiful depiction of how to make a grilled cheese sandwich.
Yes, very much so.
Really, I just, talk about mesmerizing.
Well, I mean, it was nice that he was able to get everybody, I mean, having directed all the Iron or 9 of the Iron Man movies or whatever it is, I mean, he was able to get all his friends be in the movie for nothing. I mean, it was a movie I recommended to a lot of sort of casual moviegoers who were not intense moviegoers like me, who were not going to go see The Lunchbox or A Most Wanted Man, and
also,
they all liked it.
The rare movie that makes critics look kind of good, you've got Oliver Platt as the movie who gives Jon Favreau's Chef a kick in the pants when he kind of needs it, even though he doesn't know it. And
you identify with that, Gary?
No, I don't have that kind of power. But, yeah, it's nice to see us look good for a change.
John, thanks for the call to Radio Times. You can call as well. And again, that phone number, 1-888-477-9499, to share some of the movies or a movie that you enjoyed in the year 2014. We have an email from Sabrina. She's surprised that Whiplash wasn't mentioned. A great little film, certainly worthy of being in the top 10. I'll reserve my opinion, but I'd be curious, Neil, yours.
I had it on my top 25 list.
Yeah, me too.
Shot in 19 days. I think I was surprised how good Miles Teller is. I really like him. I
mean, why surprised?
The kid who plays
as a drummer. I was surprised I wondered in the end, have they somehow doubled it? But I mean, it dubbed his drumming. But
no, I knew that he was a sort of an amateur drummer. Right. And I'm not surprised that he was good.
I love him. I had him on really good one actor. Of those coming of age movies last year that he was in. I put him on that. Was
having said that, he doesn't. He's never shown what he showed in this role.
No,
he's
no.
been witty and funny in movies before, but he really goes deep in this picture.
Well, I have to say, I didn't understand this. I didn't understand what the deal was about this movie.
Just, what do you mean?
I didn't know why did they make this movie? What was this movie about? About this sadistic teacher who, and to me, it was the sort of warring, the good father, the bad father, fighting over this child.
Yeah, that's true. And there are always movies this time of year, the sacrifices that are necessary for great art. And I think that's what the movie is trying to be. But I do agree, if there's something that kept it off my top 10 list, it's the fact that the guy reveals himself to be a full-on sociopath. And there's just a bare suggestion that the kid isn't inspired by the teacher, but is becoming him.
Exactly.
And that's slightly disturbing, but it really depends on how you read the picture.
That's kind of how I read it, but yeah. And I don't know.
I mean, I understand. I agree. I mean, I don't – why do they make any movie? I mean, but it's –
what were they trying to say?
But having said
that,
I was trying to figure out. As disturbed as I was by the picture, I was always riveted by it.
Interesting.
I agree. Yeah.
I want to segue and just take a little detour into the interview, and this is a movie that got probably much too much attention, having seen it. Did you see it, Neil?
I'm going to see it weekend because it's actually finally opening in Philadelphia this weekend.
So you're going to go and actually go see it. And this is the movie that people were threatened if they went on Christmas Day, or at least allegedly threatened that something might happen if they went to the movie theaters. The Cineplexes pulled it. Some of the independents showed it. It was also shown on demand, or I guess on the internet as well. I just want to play a little scene. I think everyone knows what it's about. The two lead characters, played by Rogan and James Franco, are getting their assignment from a CIA agent played by Lizzie Kaplan. Let's just give it a listen.
Kim Jong-un is now capable of nuking all of the West Coast. The point is, we're talking about nuclear nations at war with each other.
Why are you telling us all this information?
Well, we're telling you this because you two lucky gentlemen are going to be in a room alone with him. Congratulations, by the way.
That's right!
The CIA would love it if you two could take him out.
Hmm?
Take him out.
Take him out? Like for drinks?
No, no, no. Take him out.
Take out. Like to dinner? Take him out to a meal?
Take him out.
Like on the town? Party?
No, take him out.
You want us to assassinate the leader of North Korea?
Yes.
What?
Again, this scene from the interview. Neil, you trade in politics. Were you surprised that, some people saw this as a kind of patriotic duty to go to theater to see.
I agree with that. I'm going to – I wish the movie was released wider, and I think Seth Rogen and James Franco, especially Seth Rogen with his writing partner, last year they made This Is the End, which made my top 10.
Yeah,
Evan Goldberg, right?
And they made it for $18 million, and it made $32 million. It grossed $130 million worldwide. This year they made Neighbors, which only cost $18 million and has made $268 million worldwide. So on a $50 million investment, these two movies made almost $400 million worldwide. That's why this silliness gets made. They get the studio lets them alone because they spend no money. It's like Jon Favreau said, Chef cost $18 million. No one from the studio called him once versus the Iron Man movies, which cost $300 million, where they're there every day. But yeah, I don't want some nutbag in North Korea censoring. If I want to go see a bad movie, it's like Mike Myers did the opening of Saturday Night Live as Dr. Evil.
Oh, really?
And and a week ago.
Oh.
And he said, if you want to kill a movie, open it in January. He said, but I don't want this. You know, I'm sorry. Whoever it was that did this should not. If I want to go to a movie and take the chance, I'm going to get blown up in a movie theater, which I think is horribly unlikely in the United States. I'm going to go see a movie.
I hear you. Go ahead, Gary.
Well, I was going to say that I probably won't see it because I would have to pay. And the whole point of being a movie critic is you get to see everything for free.
Oh, is that? Is that the gambit you're running?
I probably will. For the very reasons Neil has stipulated. You know, it. First of all, I did have this as the end of my top 10 list, and I'm predisposed to granting a lot of leeway to people who are willing to make fun of themselves the way these guys did. So if they want to take a shot at North Korea, you know, go for it. I do think, though, that Sony got a little bit of undeserved criticism. It's not so much that they wanted to pull the movie. It's that
The theaters said they didn't want it.
Thank goodness some indie stepped up, and Sony then found a way to sell it. Good for them.
Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, lawyers called because you guys can't run this movie. I mean, the liability would be unbelievable. But I feel the same way. J.J. Balaban in my office, who works in my office, has watched every single episode of Jon Stewart. I told him that he owes Jon Stewart to go see Rosewater, which I saw, which I thought was an okay movie. I mean, it wasn't great. It's made $3 million. But he owed it to him, and I think it's the same thing. We owe it to these guys to go support this movie. I'm sorry. I know it's crazy, and it's silly. It's just as silly as – I mean, I don't know if it's going to be as good as – I liked This Is the End much better than Neighbors.
It's not as good as that. But what you heard is one of the funnier moments.
By the way, there was a little notice thing that was objectionable in my opinion. Some theaters went to get Team America, the Trey Parker, Matt Stone take on North Korea, which was a tremendous movie, and put it in theaters as a kind of a protest gesture. And Paramount did pull that, which to me actually,
did they really?
Yeah, which to me actually is inexcusable because they were not really under threat from anyone.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you. That's Gary Thompson. He's a film critic for the Philadelphia Daily News. Also with us, Neil Oxman, co-founder of the Campaign Group. And we are talking about politics. We're really talking about movies. And again, taking calls at 1-888-477-9499 and playing selections from movies as well. Let me get Keith from the Philly suburbs to join us. Keith, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hello.
Hi there. Go ahead, Keith.
Marty. I tuned in 15 minutes late. I wondered if you had mentioned The Lunchbox. I went to see this film not having any idea what I was going to see. And I found it in its quiet way to be emotionally quite powerful for me.
Well, Keith, I'm totally with you on this because I again went with no expectations and it made it to my top 10 list. So I completely agree. Did you want to say something, Gary?
I didn't see it.
So you didn't see it,
it just was off my list, just close. And what a sweet romantic film.
Yeah.
What a beautiful sort of slice of life of India. I mean, I thought it was great.
And plus the fact that people actually do get their lunches delivered through this insanely complicated system. That I thought was also fascinating as well. Keith, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let me segue from that to a scene from the Lego movie. You like this, right, Gary?
Loved it.
This is an animated adventure comedy film directed and co-written by Phil Lord and Christopher Miller. It tells the story of Emmett, an ordinary Lego minifigure, prophesied to save the universe from the tyrannical Lord business. Here's Emmett, and he's voiced by Chris Pratt.
Good morning, apartment. Good morning, doorway. Morning, wall. Morning, ceiling. Good morning, floor. Ready to start the day. Here it is. Instructions to fit in, have everybody like you, and always be happy. Step one, breathe. Okay, got that one down. Step two, greet the day, smile, and say,
good morning, city!
Good morning! Step three, exercise. Jumping jacks, hit them. One, two, three. I am so pumped up! Step four, shower. And always be sure to keep the soap out of your ass! Shave your face.
Brush your teeth.
Comb your hair. Wear clothes. Oop, almost forgot that one.
A scene from the Lego movie. Besides Chris Pratt, the voice of Will Ferrell, Elizabeth Banks, Will Arnett, Liam Neeson, Morgan Freeman.
So I've had my eye on these guys, Phil Lord and Chris Miller. They specialize in taking apparently crummy assignments, making really funny movies out of them. The first example I would select would be 21 Jump Street.
Who wants, I love it.
It's a great movie.
And 22 Jump Street's better.
Right. And what they do is they take, gee, this is a ridiculous idea for a movie. Let's a film version of a TV show. And they make that the subject of the movie. And they invite the audience in on the joke. So here they're assigned to make a blockbuster cartoon about Legos, which is an obvious corporate shill. And they make the corporate infiltration of culture the subject of the movie in a really funny and subversive way. I think it's genius.
It was best animated film. It's funny because Chris Pratt's the voice in that. And I've always loved him in Parks and Rec. And then he was in Moneyball. And I thought he was terrific in Moneyball. And, of course, he's the star of Guardians of the Galaxy, where I think really, really good.
And Everything is Awesome is a song of the year, no matter what the Academy Awards says. And no matter what you think about Frozen.
We're going there, are we?
No, we're not.
I thought Bradley Cooper was also great in Guardians of the Galaxy. He played the raccoon, right?
Right, yeah. I mean, Vin Diesel. I mean, everybody who played those characters was – I mean, people should go see Guardians of the Galaxy and not be afraid because
I think everyone has seen it. Yeah.
It's done very, very well.
$1 billion.
We have an email from Avi saying, I admired the theory of everything and kind of comprehend why reviewers fail to see its simple beauty. And I have to say it was actually on my list, The Theory of Everything, Stephen Hawking movie.
I think I would vote for Eddie Redmayne as the best actor of the year. He has my vote, and I agree. It just didn't make my top 10 list. It's on my top 20 list, but I thought he was amazing.
Yes. Yeah. How about for you, Gary?
Yeah, it's a really nice movie. I just – maybe top 30 for me. Redmayne was great. She was great. Felicity Jones.
Felicity Jones. Yeah. Mm. It's another person I have a crush on.
Right.
Gosh almighty. It's a long list there you have, Neil Oxman. But a lot of interesting, I think, male – you mentioned Calvary. I mean, some really interesting, I thought, male performances this year.
Yeah. Well, Brendan Gleeson's never been bad in any movie
but he
gets
to really be the –
Right.
Sort of
playing this priest who had been married, who has a daughter, and Chris O'Dowd is the butcher in this little Irish town. And Chris O'Dowd who's great in St. Vincent, is a priest in St. Vincent. Just a little wonderful Irishman. I mean, there's always these great little Irish movies that are out once in a while. And this is one of them.
Let's take another short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation again, talking about movies, the movies of 2014, with our guest, Neil Oxman, co-founder of the Campaign Group, saw 181 movies this year, and Gary Thompson, the film critic for the Philadelphia Daily News. His blog is Keep It Real. And again, we want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane talking with Gary Thompson and Neil Oxman about some of the movies that we enjoyed this year. And come on, folks, give us a call. We want to know what you enjoyed. You go to the movies, tell us what you liked or perhaps what you didn't like. And you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. I did put Snowpiercer on my list, and to me, it was just a completely entertaining, unexpected, surprising, hilarious, surreal film, and I enjoyed it top to finish.
I agree. It's you know, we're not allowed to have top 25s or
no, we're not.
But it was a really entertaining movie. It was original. I mean, it's for people who know, movie takes place on a train. I mean,
right.
But it's not, you know, because the world has ended and the only people alive allegedly in the world, the only life in the world are on this train. And the train goes around the world continuously.
At lightning speed.
At lightning speed. And that's the premise of the movie. And it's about what happens in the class system on this train.
And people sort of trying to fight their way up to the classes. Let me just play a scene. And again, we're back to Tilda Swinton. She plays a Minister Mason, a political stooge for the owner of this nonstop train. And this is just a bit of her monologue.
Would you wear a shoe on your head? Of course you wouldn't wear a shoe on your head. A shoe doesn't belong on your head. A shoe belongs on your foot. A hat belongs on your head. I am a hat. You are a shoe. I belong on the head. You belong on the foot. Yes? So it is. In the beginning, order was prescribed by your ticket. First class, economy, and freel orders like you. Eternal order is prescribed by the sacred engine. All things flow from the sacred engine. All things in their place. All passengers in their section. All water flowing, all heat rising pays homage to the sacred engine. In its own particular, preordained position. So it is.
I just love that, Gary.
Well, I love Tilda Swinton. I mean, she just, you know, how much time does she have in this movie? 10 minutes?
Yeah.
And she just is brilliant.
Unrecognizable.
Right.
Also.
Yeah, some nice orthodonture.
Very good orthodontia. Let me get Amy from South Philadelphia to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Amy. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Marty.
Hi there.
Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I was just curious if you or your guests had seen the movie Blue Ruin.
It's on my top 10 list. I loved it.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah, I did too. It's a beautiful and very unusual revenge thriller, and it was also scored by a pair of Philadelphia brothers.
Oh.
So it has sort of a Philadelphia backstory and passion to it. A lot of the people in Philadelphia were very excited about this movie.
Oh, that's great, Amy. Let me give Gary a chance.
Well, this is one of these movies that started out on Kickstarter. The director went on, made a pitch. People responded. They attracted seed money, which led to more money, and they went out and they made the movie they wanted to make. What strikes me about it, it's interesting she's talking about the movie, is I guess my prejudice would be for some of these movies to be a bit amateurish.
Uh-huh.
What's striking about them, this movie, The Babadook, is another Kickstarter movie on my list, is how not only technically proficient they are, but technically brilliant. The way that it's scored, the way that it's photographed, and the story itself. It's a low-key but very unusually thoughtful revenge movie about a guy who, his life has been ruined by the fact that his parents were murdered, he sees that the killer's been released from prison, decides he wants to kill the guy, which sets in motion a whole range of consequences which are beyond anyone's control.
Wow, wow.
It's funny. My sort of next three movies were Blue Ruin, The Immigrant, and this English prison movie called Starred Up, which stars Jack O'Connell, who is the star of Unbroken.
Yeah, and in a movie everyone needs to see next year called 71.
Okay. Now, I saw Starred Up in Liverpool. I saw a movie about an English prison with English actors in Liverpool, and the movie was subtitled in English because the accents are so thick, because Jack O'Connell's accent in this movie is so different than doing the American runner that he does in the movie Unbroken. But Blue Ruin was my next movie. If I had a top 11,
that would have made it to
your
list.
So I agree with Amy.
Yeah.
Let me play another clip from another film. This is The Wanted Man.
Most Wanted Man.
A Most Wanted Man. And this is Philip Seymour Hoffman's, I guess, his final role that he played. It's based on a Jean Le Carré novel that was published back in 2008. He plays Gunter Bachmann, the leader of a small spy unit of the German government assigned to Hamburg. And just give it a listen.
Your choice is between us and nobody. The clock is ticking. You know they'll find him. And when they do, he'll be on the first plane back to Russia. Unless the Americans want him, then we won't know where he is, and nor will he.
He doesn't want the money. He just doesn't want it.
Half radical, half rich kid, half Russian, half Chechen. Loves his mother, hates his father. You and I both know Isaac Karpov has no idea what he wants.
It's just so sad when you listen to that, and Neil, even just sort of watching the movie and watching it so carefully just to see if you could sort of figure what was going on with him.
This guy could have been making great movies for the next 30 years because he's great in everything. And this is a real – it made both of our top 10 lists. This is a movie that I wish more people had seen and had gotten wider release. I thought it was really good.
Yeah, did
you? I'll be the voice of dissent here. For whatever reason, 5 minutes into it, I knew exactly how it was going to end. And I guess my feeling was, geez, if I know this, why doesn't the Philip Seymour Hoffman character seems to know everything know this?
Oh, so interesting. So that kind of burst the bubble for you in terms of storytelling.
If I'm to be completely honest, I just couldn't believe that no one else in the movie could see it coming.
We have a tweet from Chuck saying, my favorite was Ida, a breathtakingly beautiful film. We were actually, Gary, talking about Ida before going on the air that seemed to be in a lot of people's top 10 list.
Yeah, it did. And I actually was confused because I thought for some reason it came out last year, so I didn't consider it, but it absolutely was good enough to be on there. It's a story of a novitiate who meets her only surviving relative from World War II and learns very interesting things about her family history. Yeah, I don't. Let's leave it at that. But it's, boy, how about an example of how much harrowing drama you can put in 80 minutes. I think the movie had a very
really
brief
short
and it's black
movie.
And white as yes. well, just to sort of
it is riveting. It is
really I just
really
want to
good.
Say also, I wrote this name down, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it correctly, but the actress who plays her aunt, Agata Kulesza, I think, tremendous.
Wow.
Really a great performance.
We have another tweet. This is from Yama. Two favorites, Babadook. Gary, you like that? Scary on many levels. Only Lovers Left Alive, a new spin on vampires. Very good. Fun from Jim Jarmusch.
Tilda Swinton. I didn't see it.
Oh, another Tilda Swinton.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, not my favorite Tilda Swinton performance of the year. I think I'll go with Snowpiercer for that. But what was the other movie she mentioned?
She mentioned Babadook.
Yeah, that's
only,
on my...
Only Lovers...
It's a vampire movie.
Babadook on my top 10 list, definitely. Another Kickstarter movie. This, a horror movie from Australia. We all want to believe as parents that we have these limited reservoirs of parental love. The question the movie asks is maybe we. What if we don't? Okay,
and it
sort of exists.
Pop-up books or something.
Well,
too?
It's about a mother who's being driven crazy by a very needy child, and one night she reads a bedtime story to him. And what happens next is either a function of the fact that the book is cursed, or what happens is a manifestation of her agitated mental state. And the movie exists in that space. It's great.
Interesting. Let me get Elise from Harleysville to join us on Radio Times. Elise, go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning. Happy New Year, everybody.
Thank you. Same to you.
If you mentioned these, I missed them. Obvious Child, I wanted to give a shout-out to that movie. Secret Life of Walter Mitty, I thought was delightful. And then finally, Life Itself. I wanted your guests. Take on that movie specifically.
Well, in fact, we mentioned this earlier, but Neil, Life Itself, that
yeah,
was one
made,
that you loved.
Which actually put that documentary on my top 10 list, which if you love movies, you have to see it. Watch CNN Monday night at 9 o'clock because it's going to run, but it's about Roger Ebert and it's a lot of Siskel in it. And those two guys did as much as anybody to popularize movies. And it's a real wonderful story.
Yeah.
It's also for me... as a lover of newspapers, as someone who grew up in them my entire life, it's a real tribute in a smaller way to newspapering.
Right.
And I love
because
that.
Because he's a terrific journalist, a real journalist, and with a great life.
Elise, thanks for the call to Radio Times. And again, you can call as well. That phone number 1-888-477-9499 and tell us about the movie or movies you enjoyed in 2014. A comment from Karen: what did they think about Foxcatcher? Gary?
Another movie that's close, you know, maybe top 20. Tremendous performances. You guys loved Steve Carell. The performance that I would like to take note of is Mark Ruffalo.
Oh, he's great. Yeah.
It kind of, in me, creates the almost all the emotional content of the movie. As the guy who's on the other side of this conflict, his brother, he's Dave, his brother Mark Schultz is under the sort of malicious influence of the John DuPont characters, and there's this constant tension between the three parties. I think he really goes a long way towards giving me the emotional resonance that the movie really needs, because Carell, as good as he is, his job is to be kind of a distant and creepily detached figure in the movie.
And Ruffalo is, in many ways, the sort of heart of this film as well.
Carell is... I mean, as Gary pointed out, just because he does comedy doesn't mean he can't act. But he's so weird in this movie. I mean, he's mesmerizingly weird in the movie. He pulls it off. I don't think – there's nothing false about what he's doing. I mean, you believe – you sort of separate the fact that it's Carell and this is he's become this weird guy who's grown up in this weird situation and – he does a great job.
I think he won at Cannes. He got the best performance, I believe, at Cannes this year. We have an email from Charles. I really enjoyed Captain America, the Winter Soldier. Even though I grew up collecting Marvel comics, I was not a fan of Captain America. The movie made me a fan. I was impressed by how the movie tied into the first Captain America movie, the Avengers movie, the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. TV series, and on and on and on. And, I mean, if you like that kind of stuff, there are movies for people.
I did like that movie. You know what I liked about it, which was so unexpected to me, that was almost a screwball romantic comedy with Scarlett Johansson as whatever Marvel character that is. I don't know. I don't read comic books. And Captain America. I thought they had great chemistry.
Yeah.
And by the way, she was really good in that very weird movie Under the Skin, which I don't know if people saw. It's almost entirely told in pictures about an alien picking up guys in Glasgow. You can't understand what anyone's saying, but you don't need to.
Yeah, just watch
it. I found that transfixing as well.
What did you think of Nightcrawler? This is Jake Gyllenhaal.
I have it on my top 10 list.
Yeah.
I thought it was a really smart movie, half horror movie, half kind of satire of this new freelance economy, which has come out of the Great Recession. So it's Jake Gyllenhaal is this homicidal maniac, and he's got an idea for a disruptive startup, and he's going to get to accident scenes before anyone else, take grisly footage, sell it to DV stations. If it's not grisly enough, he makes it a little grislier.
Yeah.
That's where the horror is. And he assigns a lot of the dirty work to an unpaid intern, and that's where the satire is. A guy named Dave, played by Riz Ahmed, who's great. And you get to see in this movie what happens in this sort of new normal economy when you ask for a raise. Do so at your own peril.
Indeed. And Jake Gyllenhaal just
literally does not blink in the entire movie. Right. Just has that ominous, weird, bizarre stare. He does a good job.
Another first-time director, Dan Gilroy.
Interesting. Let's talk about Inherent Vice. You like this, Gary. Paul Thomas Anderson.
Yeah, it's for a very specialized audience. It may be an audience of one, and maybe that one person is me. I'm not sure. It helps to have lived through the 70s, you know, to have been reading detective fiction while you were doing it the whole time. It's about a pot-smoking detective played by Joaquin Phoenix, and I have sort of described him as a missing link between Philip Marlowe and Jeff Lebowski, that's what he is. And Lebowski, like this movie, was very hip to the conventions of detective fiction. One of the traditions that it honors is in Chandler, you don't always follow the details of the story. I know you had a hard time with this.
I had a hard time following it.
It's not really that important because even the detective loses interest in some point. And he busies himself trying to come up with a good outcome for the few people he meets along the way that he actually likes.
Yeah.
That's kind of the essence of the story.
Well, I certainly love just watching Joaquin Phoenix.
And there's some great actors here popping up in Small World. Josh Brolin, Jenna Malone, Reese Witherspoon again, and Owen Wilson has a really funny role in this movie as a character who keeps popping up in different places and guises.
I'm surprised, speaking of Reese Witherspoon, that Wilde didn't make top 10 lists of any of us. She's really good in it. It's a good movie.
Well, we have to end our discussion. And my thanks to you, Neil Oxman. Thanks to you, Gary Thompson, for joining us in this hour of Radio Times. And we want to close things out with some music. And this is the music from Boyhood Hero, performed by the band Family of the Year.
With everyone else, your masquerade. I don't wanna be a part of your parade. Everyone deserves a chance to walk with everyone else while holding down a job to keep my girl around.
And we wanted to close things out with that piece of music. And again, this is a song called Hero, performed by the band Family of the Year and from the film Boyhood. Adam Staniszewski, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times. For more information about the program, go to whyy.org/Radio Times. And you can check us out on Facebook and Twitter. You can also download podcasts of the program. It's produced by Susan Greenbaum, Debbie Bilder, Emily Bryant, and John Ahrens. I'm Marty Moskowain. Happy New Year, and thanks for joining us today on Radio Times. And do stay with us. We'll be right back.